Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. I hope everybody is having a fantastic day. You know what? It's been a crazy week just due to the fact that after coming back from Catalyst and taking the weekend to relax, the muscles in my back literally have relaxed, and now my vertebrae, my fourth and fifth vertebrae, have descended upon my sciatic nerve, which makes it, I may have said that wrong, just makes it a pain in certain situations to walk. So I've been seeing the chiropractor a couple times a day. It's working through it. Things are getting better. I'm able to cross my legs again, and that is good. Hey, we are on Radio for Your Mind. This is Troy Dooley. I hope you're having a fantastic morning. We're in Alan Fine's book. We're in actual chapter 3. And Alan's book came out on the 14th. It's called You Already Know How to Be Great, A Simple Way to Remove the Interference and Unlock Your Greatest Potential. Now, when we analyze that, just that aspect, greatest potential, I bet every one of us have this passion, have this desire to do more, to be more, to accomplish more. And that's what I get excited about. This is chapter 3 is called Getting Rid of Interference. And you know, interference comes in all sorts of methods, all sorts of processes, not just situations, but we allow our mind to be influenced. Matter of fact, on Facebook today, I put influence is earned, never given. And I had somebody debate that and say, no, I think you're wrong. And I very respectfully disagreed, and here's why. We've been given the freedom of choice. Whether subconsciously or consciously, we decide on who we allow to influence our life. Even if you take it to the greatest depth where people will say, well, I was brainwashed. In that case, you allowed somebody to influence you through different mechanisms, different methods, different deals. See, we control it. Most of the time, we subconsciously give up control, and that's what causes influence. Fear is probably the biggest influencer. And when you look at that causes the biggest, I should say, interference, because if you look at interference, we see that fear is right in the middle of that. You know, in Alan's book, he talks about the biggest time that he ever faced fear, and it was when he was literally going out of a cave up a mountain where they climb up Everest, and it was amazing because he said it just paralyzed him. And I thought, that's amazing to me. I was actually sitting there today at the harbor thinking this through. Very few things cause me, now this is me, not everybody else, me fear. I have a very high pain tolerance. This is why I brought up the sciatic nerve. See, I can go through a day and until I twist wrong, until I bend wrong, does the pain hit a tolerance level that throws everything off and will put me on my knees. When it comes to facing fear, my little boy last night said, Dad, how many times have you been stabbed? Because he was listening to a story that I told in the Marine Corps. And in my walk of life, in the way I was raised, whether a knife, a club, or a gun, that did not bring fear to me. It did not paralyze me. Matter of fact, it's usually words that cause me fear. It's the thought process. It's what somebody might say. I remember one of my early bounty hunting episodes. I'd walked into Sam Bruno's office in Kansas City and introduced myself. I was young. I was 18, 19 years old. Did not carry a gun at the time, at least not concealed. And he said, if you're as good as you think you are, I understand, fresh in the Marine Corps, cocky as all get out. He said, you go bring this guy in. I looked at the name, didn't mean anything to me, looked at the address, knew where it was. It was the Wayne Minor apartment projects. They've since destroyed those projects and built single dwelling, I guess it's a multiplex, but little townhomes. I go in my car, I drive down, all black neighborhood. I look at the address. It's on the fifth floor. I go upstairs. I knock on the door. Cute little black gal, negligee, answers the door, doesn't leave much to the imagination. I explain who I am and that I'm here to pick up so-and-so. She slams the door, not politely, just slams the door. I'm standing out in the hallway. It's an open hallway, you know, to the elements. I look down, and here's all these guys surrounding my car. And then I thought, well, you know, it does probably look kind of stupid. Here's a white boy in a black neighborhood. A nice black man that stood about 6'2", weighed probably 250, came to the door, built like a brick house. Said, "You want me?" And I said, "Yeah." Said, "You actually missed your court date. Sam wants you to come in. He hired me to come pick your butt up and bring you in." Said, "Hang on a minute." He closed the door, didn't slam it. Came back a minute later, was putting on his shirt, already had his shoes on. We walked down. People looking at him. He's saying hi to everybody. Said he'd be back in a little bit. We get in the car and we leave. I show up at Sam's office, bring this guy in, and Sam was a cigar smoker, and I swear it fell out of his house. Sat down, told the guy he'd rewrite his bond. His other bail agent took him back over to the city jail. They do whatever they had to do, and he looked at me and he said, "Do you have any clue what you just did?" I said, "I did exactly what you asked me to do." He said, "The gentleman that you just brought in actually is the leader of a black gang, and he's wanted on attempted murder where there's an eyewitness." He goes, "He had decided not to go to court on his own accord. It wasn't a mistake. He just didn't show up, period." Now, until Sam explained to me in vivid detail what I had just done, there was no fear. After he explained it, apprehension did set in, and I decided from that point forward, anytime we went into that neck of the woods, I would take somebody with me. Every one of us will have interference come in. Sometimes it's by actions that we don't control. It's by the outside elements, as we're going to get into looking at what Alan shares here. Sometimes it's not physicalness, it is the words. A word that a beautiful woman says to a man that causes rejection. The words that a husband says to his wife that causes rejection. Sometimes fear will come in with physicalness where somebody slaps somebody or beats somebody. But in most cases, fear is from the internal elements that we have, the stories that we tell ourselves, the lies, the fantasies that we keep saying that cause those limiting beliefs. Alan writes this. He says, interference, or perhaps more appropriately in this case, interference, completely blocks our faith. I do not believe I can take another step. That's exactly what happens. Fear will paralyze us. It extinguishes our fire. I have no desire to continue this perilous adventure. All of a sudden, an epic adventure will turn into a nightmare on Elm Street. You guys have heard me say that cliche before. All of a sudden, our focus is consumed by that moment, what we are facing or perceive that we are facing. So the reality, actually our perception becomes our reality. All of a sudden, everything that we think is going to happen becomes so vividly real to us, we stop. Here's what Alan writes. Though perhaps not as dramatically to one degree or another, interference does affect our faith, fire, and focus, our performance. Nearly every day we see this happen. Some of this interference is external. It comes from things that are mostly outside of our direct control. However, the majority is from within. See, that's what we have to look at. If it's coming from within, how can we change this? Tom Hopp talks about this in his book, Time Out. John Maxwell, all his books talk about this. We must figure out a way, and that's what this book is about. It goes into detail. See, all of us have our monkeys, Alan calls them gorillas, that we have on our back. If you're in sales, here's one of them that Alan talks about in here. It's the fact that a boss comes to you and says, "Okay, I want you to increase your quota." And you're thinking, "How can I increase my quota? This is a down economy. I've got my wife and my family to think about. What am I going to do? You become paralyzed by the thought of having to increase your quota. So what happens? You don't increase your quota. You don't even make phone calls. You're so paralyzed. See, our mind will exaggerate what we're afraid of. I do have one fear. I'll explain that to you. This is a fear that I think about every day. Two of them, actually. One is if the good Lord takes Paige before me and I have to go through life without the woman that I've come to love unconditionally. Now, it's not a fear that paralyzes me. It keeps me on my toes. It keeps me wanting constantly to remind her how much I love her. It's a positive thing. Or at least I've made it that way. The other fear that I have, and it probably was more vivid as I was younger than it is today. And fear might not even be the best word, but here's what it is. Happen to look my children and grandchildren in the eye and say, I cheated on your grandma. All those times I told you I loved her unconditionally, I lied. I allowed my own appetite to get in the way, and I did something, and now we're getting a divorce. Now, because those two fears really do just have to do with Paige and my family, here's what happens. I'm constantly making sure I stay out of situations that could cause me to fall, to cause my appetite. That's another training that we'll do down the road. But to allow a temporary selfish gratification get in the way of my long-term residual relationship. See, that's what I don't want to do. We all have these gorillas. Some of them are personal. Some of them are in business. We have to look this through. We got to figure out and know what to do. Here's some of the common fears in the workplace. Having your credibility questioned. Being left out of decision-making. Being criticized in front of others. Not getting information necessary to succeed. Having a key assignment given to somebody else. Having disagreements that might lead to damaged relationships. See, this is, we all have this interference that blocks our mind. We have to make sure that we know how to control that. So how do we get rid of the interference? Here's what Alan says. Usually we can't change the external influence. It's just the way things are. As his teenage son adoptively says, just deal with it. However, by reducing the internal interferences, we can free ourselves and others to get higher performance. And the simplest, most accessible way to get rid of internal interference is through focus, through changing what we pay attention to and how we pay attention to it. See, the concept here, and actually, Chet Holmes talks about this in a different method in his sales, The Ultimate Sales Machine, but here's what we've got to look at. If we know what we want our objective to be, if we know what we want our outcome to be, and we narrow this down to where we stay in that channel, here's what we will do, because there's two opposites to staying focused. Write this down. One is boredom. See, if you are bored, you will not stay focused. You'll let that ADHD kind of take effect, and you'll be all over the place. The other one is constant worry. Worry, boredom. If you're constantly worried about what ifs, you never accomplish what is. If you allow boredom to set in, then you never focus on finding the challenge that you need. As a leader, as a manager, as a CEO of a company, your number one objective outside of the traditional business sense should be to make sure that you can keep your teams challenged, to keep your leaders challenged. Dallin Larson has been criticized for this. He's the co-founder of Monavi. He's changed the compensation plan 16 times. Each time he's added a new rank and done some other stuff, and what's happened is he's kept his top leaders challenged. Some people say he's taking money from the little guys. I don't see that. Actually, it's a binary. It's hard to do. But he's tried to keep his people challenged. BK Barreco, the creative and exuberant founder of Vima, he made a compensation plan enhancement this year. He doesn't make many, not near like Dallin. But he came out with a passion. He started, I think, reading through some of his dad's journals and some of his dad's notes and realized that he wanted to keep his company focused on the core competency that it was created for. That was for the average distributor to be able to move some great products. Here's what he did. He put a brand new initiative together, and he told his top leaders what he was doing. He tweaked the compensation plan with the goal of creating 20,000 new distributors earning $500 a month. Instead of looking at the top leaders and saying, okay, I'm going to change my comp plan to challenge them directly, what he did was he challenged his leaders to go out there and help him accomplish the goal. See, they all of a sudden have one common vision again, and the challenge is who can create more of the 20,000 people earning $500 a month. Every CEO is going to be different, but the outcome is the same. Keep your people challenged. If you keep them challenged, they stay focused. Hubert Humphrey used to say, do it in 90-day cycles. People can stay focused for 90 days. Alan calls it the flow experience. See, if you just put boredom on a line over on the right, and then you put worry at the top on the left, and then you draw an arrow towards boredom, and underneath it you put perceived capacity or skill. What happens is the less that you perceive that you can do, the less control you have, the less capability that you have, if you think you have no skills, you get bored. You start looking around trying to find something else. If you can put an arrow going up towards worry and write the words perceived challenge, the further away you get from your focus, the more that the challenge becomes a worry. Oh, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. But if you notice where the arrow that points towards boredom is, and the bottom of the arrow that points towards perceived or towards worry, you get this little focus point. See, that's your flow state. If you realize that you constantly have to be growing, and you realize that you want to constantly be challenged, then and this isn't in Alan's book, or you guys would be able to see it, but I believe that if you put over at the top right, objective, then your focus will always be on that objective if you do this right. See, people's description of being in the flow state will universally reflect a sense of intense focus and engagement. This week, I'm in some intense focus. We're rebuilding one of our websites, MLM Help Desk, and we're preparing to launch a new website called Epic Training Online. Total focus. In the process of doing that, we're also releasing several new videos, and I started the brand new weight loss challenge by Body by Vi. I'm doing this in a new review that we're going to be doing on this company. I want to see if their actual product lives up to all the hype, so I decided I'd use it. See, my focus, and this is why I want to get to you guys, the main focus is I want to be able to give results to people to help them build their business, no matter what company they're in. If by creating focused attention, you're going to be able to do some great, great things. Listen to what Alan writes. After a lifetime of study in human performance, Claremont graduate university professor, and I can't pronounce their name, it's really long, it looks like it's Czechoslovakian, suggested that we all perform best when there's a balance between our perception of the challenge we're facing and our perception of the skill we have to meet the challenge. In other words, get this is great. We need to have enough challenge to keep us excited, but not too much that it overwhelms or discourages us. According to Professor, this is when we are most likely to get into the state of flow, a state where we're focused, fully engaged, and motivated to reach the outcome. In this state, we process things faster, learn faster, and are often not even aware of time or space. It's the state that whatever we're doing seems almost effortless. How many times have you been doing something that you passionately enjoy, and time seems to fly? All of a sudden, you look at me and think, man, alive, I can't believe we've been at that long. And then how many times have you been in situations and it was nothing that you wanted to do, and you thought, man, this clock is never going to go. Man, 5 minutes seem like an hour. I'll tell you when mine is. I can drive down the beach with my wife, and time seems to stand still. Listening to her voice, listening to her share her stories, the next romance, the next historical, the next adventure that she's writing, never ceases to amaze me. Although she's not a public speaker, she's one of the greatest storytellers, not just writers, but tellers that I've ever listened to. I can literally get into her story. It's amazing. When we spend time together in private, in, you know, that those romantic, erotic, sensual, romantic times, it seems like time goes too fast. It's just like on our drives down the beach. Time will stand still in that moment, but then I turn around and it's like, man, I can't believe we're already back home. See, when you spend quality time, I'm not just talking about physical, but just the intimate time, physical and emotional, with somebody, it seems like you want it to last forever, but it was over in a blip, in a heartbeat. For most of us, when we have to serve on jury duty, it seems like it lasts forever. Sometimes when we're sitting in church listening to a preacher, it seems like it'll last forever, and it's only been 30 minutes. Those are the times when you're totally engulfed, when you're totally focused. When I'm sitting on the telephone helping somebody, serving a CEO, serving a brand new distributor, I get excited. I talked to a gentleman yesterday that wanted to ask me about the leads business. He saw a testimonial I'd done for Enrique Garibay over at MLM Leads. He said, "Do you own that company?" I said, "No, I'm not even an equity partner anymore." Enrique and I split ways 18 months ago. He said, "Well, what makes that company so unique?" And it was so fun. I spent 30 minutes talking about my friend and explaining that it wasn't the leads that made that company unique. It was Enrique. It was the passion, the excitement, the total enjoyment that he gets from helping people build their business. I loved it. It's like he said, "Man, I got to let you go. I got to get back to work." He was working. I felt so bad then for his boss. See, flow involves a deep focus on what the performer perceives as a doable task, a focus that by its very nature eliminates interference. This in and of itself is a powerful performance idea for managers and leaders. Listen to this. Often we push people out of the flow simply by overwhelming them with too much frequency of repeated knowledge or by the way that we cascade goals or assign tasks. See, one or two things should be all that you focus your people on. In the old days when I was with Hubert and John Denham, what we used to do is we'd tell people, take the magazine, take the CD, hand it out, pick it up in a few days, ask them, are you in or you out? That was so simple. People could do that. In this new product that Vima brought out, this Vima PM, I made the comment the other day, what I would do if it was me is I'd take these 2-ounce bottles, I'd give three of them to a prospect. I'd say, use these for 3 days. I'm going to call you. I want to know if you're in or you're out. You either want the product or you don't. You either want to do the business or you don't, whatever the case is. Body by Vi has done the 90-day challenge. They say, hey, buy the product. Use it for 90 days. At the end of 90 days, you're either in or you're out. See, each company that's successfully run by somebody that understands what Alan is writing about here knows you've got to keep it simple. That's the name of the game. That's the key behind what it is that we're doing, the key behind how we can make this happen. Alan writes this, "The principle of focused attention enables us to survive day by day." See, those of us that use focused attention, we realize that unless we find something to focus on that doesn't threaten us, we're going to be in deep trouble. See, if I had to go through my day like some people do and say, oh my gosh, how am I going to make ends meet? Oh my gosh, how am I going to pay the payments? Oh my gosh, what am I going to do with all these granddaughters? Oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my sons? Oh my gosh, my daughters are growing into young women. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That what if, what if, what if. See, if we go through life doing that, here's what happens at the end of the day. We come home, we get in the refrigerator and get out a beer, we go to the bar and get a shot of whiskey and water. We sit down, turn on the remote, and watch TV and fantasize about being whoever it is on TV. We cannot do that, folks. You cannot let life slip by you. When you're in a situation and you start to feel the fear, you need to look back at an experience where you realize, I'm in control. When I start to feel fear, I look back at every physical engagement that I've ever been in, whether I've won or lost. Because I realize, you know what? Fear is just a perception. When I think back, when somebody says, and I've had plenty of times because of my career choice, where people have said negative things to me personally. They discredit, or they try to discredit. They will disagree. They will lambast. I get to decide, do I want to engage or not engage? I get to decide, do I want those words to harm me or not? See, many times growing up, we hear sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will never hurt us. That is a myth. That isn't even a wives' tale. That is just a flat-out lie. I can probably take more physical abuse than most people because of the pain tolerance that I was just given at birth. But the words of my wife or the words of my daughter or the words of my son can cut me right through my heart. We're all the same. And when you're into a situation, you get to decide, do I want to engage or not engage? If you're in a situation and you're in a relationship that is literally being controlled by a dull, negative, disillusioned crybaby, you need to figure out a way to get out of it. I see this a lot with women, more women than men. That's why women are in abusive relationships. It's hard for them to experience. The fear gets so big. Folks, if you know somebody in that, I'd suggest buying them Alan's book just so that they can walk through this process and figure out that they have to get out of this. See, this is the key. I want to finish up with what Alan writes here. As well as with individual performance, the principle of focused attention delivers results in all kinds of teams and organizational performance. In business organizations, for example, focusing on a few critical variables of performance shifts the attention away from interference such as politicking, complaining, backstabbing, and turf wars. In doing so, it unleashes faith and fire. It facilitates the use of knowledge and transforms the organization into a truly learning organization. In marriages and families, focusing on the critical variables involved in the accomplishment of a few shared objectives shifts the attention away from arguing and positioning and one-upping each other that creates all that nasty interference in a family. As a result, faith is unleashed. Fire is ignited, and the performance results generate even greater faith and fire in family unity. In working to improve, this is in closing, in working to improve our own performance or helping others improve their potential, it's blocked by interference. We must start focusing on what's important. So take today and think through this. Take today and try to figure out what is it I need to do to change. Tomorrow we're going to get into part two. We're going to start looking at the processes of making these changes. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here tomorrow with me on Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.